Enter the healer's realm, where your spirit will find peace with your host, Denise D'Amigio. We are here to remember. We are here to heal. We are here to ascend and transcend. Grab your free gift in the podcast description today.
Hello, and welcome back to the healer's realm. I am your host, Denise D'Amigio, and I am actually here with this amazing bomb lady, Josie England. And she's amazing. She is so incredible. She is a peer support specialist for Shasta County, HHSA, and she's in the mental health branch, guys. And she has so much valuable information that she's going to give us. She's a mom of two, a girlfriend of one. No players over there, girl. And a domestic violence survivor. She has an incredible story. Thank you so much, Josie, for coming on the show. I really appreciate you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, so first of all, you know, I know that you like have this incredible story, right? And so I just want to know is, first of all, how long have you been in mental health? And why did you actually decide to go down this route? What made you come down this route?
So, I mean, you know, our lives, of course, our lives take us to different places, and it just kind of happened. And I like that it just kind of happened. So after I came out of a domestic violence situation, I had been out of it for about 4 or 5 years, and I had been doing really well with taking care of my mental health. I was diagnosed with a couple of things, PTSD from the physical and verbal violence, and Stockholm syndrome. If you guys aren't familiar with what that is, that's basically someone who identifies with their perpetrator, with their abuser, and so you feel very connected to your abuser. And I was also diagnosed with major depressive disorder, which I come to find that is something I've had my entire life, just didn't know. I realized, I was like, oh, I got some stuff. All right. I was at a point, you know, we all come to a crossroads. You know, I'm a parent. I want to continue to be able to parent. I don't want to have to lay down and just give up. And so I laugh now about this, but
it's always good to be able to laugh in the end, right?
Yeah. You know, I like that I can giggle just a little bit because it taught me so much, and I'm so thankful for the process. I, you know, was just taking care of my mental health. I decided to do some classes at Shasta County Mental Health while I was just kind of taking care of myself, not really doing much else because at the time I just couldn't do much more. And, you know, we are where we are. You can do what you can do. And, you know, and so I was like, this is what I want to do. I just want to take some classes that were being offered over there. And one just happened to be the Peer Support Academy. And it was being taught by a wonderful lady and a good friend of mine now, Kathy Tillman. And I took it. It was about, how long was that? I think it was about 8 weeks, 10 weeks long. And it was just a completely new concept that you can be a peer in terms of coming along somebody and modeling what good mental health looks like and helping people walk through their journey, which is something a clinician can't do, a therapist can't do. Those are all the wonderful people that I work with now. Case manager can't do it, though. You know, these very well-credentialed folks aren't able to connect with a client like I can because I've been through it and I can share my whole story with them. There's no part of my wellness story, my journey, that I cannot share with a client versus a therapist or a case manager or a clinician needs to maintain and structural control when they're working with a client. And so some things they can't divulge. But the magic is in being able to share your full story. When I share my story with people, I see their faces go like, what? Like, really? Like, yeah, really? Like, I was at a point where I wasn't brushing my teeth, honestly. I wasn't taking care of my body, my hygiene, nothing. And, you know, I can be completely candid about those things and see how someone's like, yeah, that's where I am. And so I always say that peer support is magic. I know that there's some clinician somewhere whose head is exploding a little bit because we don't like magical thinking. And I understand that from a mental health perspective, a lot of therapists and clinicians don't like magical thinking, but I think that it's magic. because of how instant the connection is once you tell them, you know, I deal with things as well. And again, therapists can't do that. And so that's pretty much how I came to be a part of this, very organically, just by going to a class and learning all about it, finding out what it was and realizing this is something I can do. So that's basically how I slid right in here. So,
and that's always good. It seems to me like usually how people kind of like get into their actual calling, their purpose, is because it has something to do with something that had happened into their life. You said something really true. And this is what I believe too, because I feel like I am, you know, I'm just comfortable also with telling my story, but there's so much power in telling your story, and there's so much transformation that could happen when somebody can understand that you're just like them. You know, you were at one point here in this moment, and now you're able to say that you have made it and overcame and been triumphant. So because you know, kind of like divulged a little bit of your story, can you please divulge with us, you know, the audience and myself, your story? I would love to hear it.
Okay. No, absolutely. No problem. So it's so, you know, there's so many different parts, but I like to talk a lot about my diagnosis because I think that's important, because it destigmatizes the idea that you can even have a mental health diagnosis or disorder. And it allows people to feel, it normalizes it, so people can go get the help they need. When you get a diagnosis, that's just essentially a roadmap. Hey, boo, here's a roadmap. This are some things you got to do to live a little bit differently if that's what you choose to do. And so I always divulge. I'm like, I'll tell everybody. because I want everyone to know that they can get well and stay well. When, apparently, I remember I was working with a therapist. I've done a lot of therapy. But I was working with a therapist, and we were talking about like what my earliest memory was. And I have a couple early memories, but one of them I had was of me probably about 4 or 5 years old. And I was just standing, and my sisters were playing around me. And I was just standing there, just staring off into nothing. And I was like, oh my gosh, why was I just staring off into nothing? So I already had what was the beginnings of major depressive disorder. But, you know, my mom and dad, you know, family, they don't notice that, you know, you got a big family. They got mouths to feed. We're in Nebraska. There's other things that need to be prioritized. And even if my mom saw something that was wrong, I don't know if she would have been able to find the resources at that time to be able to help me anyway. I had major depressive disorder pretty much for as long as I can remember. And it makes you feel like you're stuck, essentially, and you get overwhelmed really quickly. You don't feel like going outside. You don't feel like playing with people. You don't feel like talking to people. You're reclusive. And so that's how it shows up in adolescence anyway. And as in adulthood, and when you, well, adolescence, but when you start transitioning into teenagehood, which is what I did, I started having suicidal idealization, and I thought all the time about how I was going to kill myself. That was so important to me. And I would think about death, and death was it. And I attempted it a couple times. And my dad died when I was 10. And so that really kind of broke it open. And I was always thinking about death. Mm-hmm. And then when I became an adult, that just transitioned right into my adulthood, suicidal idealization. And that's, I was hoping when I got pregnant, I was like, okay, you know, and I was really nervous. I was like, I don't know how I'm going to be a mom. I knew that I had even pursued a little bit before I got pregnant, mental health care. But actually, Shasta County Mental Health, I was 19, and they told me, they held me on a hold, because once you have a suicidal attempt or something close to it, or if you let somebody know that you are dealing with suicidal idealization, they tend to put you on a hold. And so they held me at their, at the time, inpatient facility. We're going on 17 years now, so I'm aging myself. But
tell them my age.
But yeah, so they put me on a hold, and I knew, like, I was like, I don't know what to do. I didn't know how to take care of myself. I didn't, you know. And they were like, "Oh, you're fine. You're fine. You're just something about like they were really offhanded, and they, I forget exactly the words, but I want to say like they just treated me like I was overreacting, you know, and that I was completely okay. And I was like, I'm not okay. I knew it wasn't okay, but I could feel it. It was just a heaviness that I carried around with me everywhere. And I knew it wasn't normal. And because you see other people, it's like, they don't look like they're carrying this heaviness around with them. So I had my kids, got married first, and then I had my kids. Unfortunately, I married, my picker was a tad broken, I like to say, and I married a man who didn't love himself. So there's no way he can actually love me. And that was evident throughout our entire marriage. And today, my girls question whether their dad loves them. So at that point, my picker was definitely broken, and I married a man who threw me through a wall, kicked me, spat on me, called me nigger. He, you know, verbally abused me. I was just a carpet. I was absolutely a rug. And I don't think that all domestic violence survivors are rugs by no means, but I know for me, I was a rug. I just allowed this to happen over and over again. And part of the reason why it happened over and over again is because I was so confused. I was like, wait a minute, aren't you supposed to love me? I don't understand what's happening here. And then I had very deep-rooted family values. My mom and dad stayed together until death did them part. We saw, you know, I came from a very religious upbringing. I was in it to win it. And he was telling me that it was me who was the problem. And I was believing him. I was like, yes, it's me. It's got to be me. Because how else, you know? So I was trying to fix myself, and the house couldn't be clean enough, and I couldn't be pretty enough, and you know, the whole gamut. I couldn't make enough money, and he just wasn't happy. But I mean, you know, and finally I got to the point where we have a local women's shelter here, and I was just like, you know, I think I need to go in. I don't know what's happening, and this had to be 6 years in the marriage. And so I was like, I don't see this happening to other people. Some of my girlfriends, I would ask, does your husband do this or does your husband do that? Because I was trying to figure out, like, wait a minute, what's going on here? I was like, does your husband call you fat? I remember asking one of my friends that, and she's like, no. So I was like,
whoa. And it's not my husband then. You know, oh my goodness.
Yeah. And so I all I could do was compare our relationship to other people's relationships. And that kind of helped me the very, you know, beginning of a journey of like, maybe something's wrong here.
Exactly. Something ain't right. Something really ain't right.
And yes. So I went to a women's shelter, and they give you a form to fill out, and it has all these boxes, like check these if any of these are going on with you. And I had dang near every box checked on that paper. And I was staring at it like, oh my God, what does this mean? And so I got in, I talked with the advocate. And I just remember the shock I was in for someone who had been living it. I don't know why I was so shocked, but I was. And it was like, oh my God, it finally set on me. I was being abused. I was like, this is an abusive relationship. This is an abusive man. You know, I was able to call it what it was. And
That's powerful.
Powerful. When you can call it by its name, you know, when you're so busy thinking it's you or what have you. So I was able to do that. And that was the moment. I'll never forget it. I remember sitting there and just kind of like, oh my God. And after that happened, I went back to him. Probably the average is 7 times for a woman anyway. So the stats or a person to go back to their abuser 7 times. I went back probably the 9 times. I'm like, ooh, I beat the average. I did it. So I did. I kept cycling back. And of course, the cycle of violence, if you're familiar with it at all, you know, you got that honeymoon period, and then you get that tension building, and then boom, you got that explosion. And it's just a hot mess. It's not an environment for children. And so I had for a long time a lot of guilt about how I handled that. Like, how come I didn't leave earlier? But, you know, we're gone now. So thank goodness.
Exactly. So
I had to really walk through that in therapy and really take a look at myself so deeply, you know, because I'm like, I don't want to ever end up in another relationship like this. And so after that, the divorce process itself, because, you know, it's like, I got to divorce this man. We got to do it. And it's just all this back and forth. And when you try to get away from an abuser, if you may already know this, but things tend to escalate. And, you know, there's a lot of verbal abuse. There was some physical abuse, you know, there was threatening. He threatened my mother, but my mother is not somebody to be threatened. I was like, good luck with that. And that didn't work out for him. I have to give a lot of credit to Shasta Lake Police Department up here in Shasta, in the Mount Shasta area, I'll say, because they are the police department that when I called, they seem to have such a good grasp of domestic violence. We have RPD here, Reading Police Department and Anderson Police Department. I'm sure they do their jobs, but they did not respond like Shasta Lake Police Department did. When I showed them the text message that he had violated the restraining order, all the things that I had to go through, put in place to try to protect myself, and he violated it, they were arresting him. They were doing what needed to be done multiple times. And so I'm still so grateful to Shasta Lake Police Department for that. So yeah, you know, after that, so you're like, your life is an upheaval. My life was just a mess, really. Divorce process, house is being sold. Kids are going back and forth between these two parents now and fighting for custody and wanting to protect my children and the whole gamut and trying to maintain some sort of stability. But how could I maintain stability when I had mental health issues that I hadn't dealt with? So I struggled to maintain stability and go through that at the same time. But when I finally was like, I need to do something different here, and that took me years. It took me about 2-3 years to realize I needed to do something different, because even after divorce, the abuse didn't stop. It just came in a different form. I like to say that he kicked me and my kids, because he's kicked me physically before, but after the divorce, he couldn't get to me really physically anymore. But he would use the kids to do it, which is absolutely a form of abuse. And wow. So, you know,
I'm glad that you recognize that, because just like you said, it was abuse, but it just came in a different form. He couldn't get to you physically, but he was able to get to you in a different way. Wow.
Yeah. And so I had to recognize what my part was in that. And I had to recognize, like, you know, okay, he is like this, but there is a way to get through this. That's one thing I think I knew. Is that even though I can't see the solution to something, it doesn't mean that there's not a solution. But my solution came in the form of me taking personal responsibility. And that meant taking the time to go to the doctor, talk to the doctor, talk to my therapist, really engaging in my own mental health, wellness, healing journey, instead of being a participant. And sometimes we can be, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that, but most of us find that being passive about it gets you nowhere. So you just kind of keep going around in the same circle. And I knew I didn't want that for my kids. And exactly. So, you know, it's like they're the ones being mostly affected by my choices, his choices, the whole gamut. When I started taking personal responsibility for myself, that's when things changed. That's when I got a great psychiatrist who was like, you have MDD. So that was the moment I was actually diagnosed with that. And he also let me know, you need to be spending more time out in the sun. He's like, you're a dark lady. You're not getting as much vitamin D as you need. When people have major depressive disorder, they need to have more vitamin D in their system. And so that's natural light. He's like, that's the best form of vitamin D. You could take supplements, which were prescribed to me as well. And I'll tell you this, you know, and I don't want my story to sound too magical, but this is just so true that when I started taking just vitamin D, say I stopped taking my other medications today, when I just started taking that, my world literally went from dark to light. Everything lightened up. It brightened up for me. When I started to be consistent with my vitamin D and getting out in the sun, my mood was lighter. I think I became who I was always supposed to be anyway, which is a person who is, you know, engaged with people, a person who is outgoing, a person who, you know, just is living life, enjoying life, being curious, all of that. I was not doing any of that before. And I was mainly just kind of in a struggle. And that's where my mind was. I'm in a struggle. My mom struggled. My grandma struggled, you know? And now it's just like, no, I got this whole big wide world to explore. And it was just such a beautiful moment. And that was the moment too, that really, it helped me to pull away from that idea of having to be my ex-husband's wife, you know, like my kids needed that. Like it, I let go of it. Like, this is, as much as I would have wanted something different for my kids, this is what it is. And how can I make it good for them as it is? And so I was able to begin to do that and, you know, baby steps with all things. And so we made baby steps and, you know, got my own apartment, got my own car, started living a different life. Really, you know, decided that I wanted to do something that I love. I don't want to just do anything. I want to do something that when I go to work every day, I'm learning and growing myself. And that is peer support 100%, because we talk constantly about wellness and we talk about, and I see people struggle, but I also see people get well and figure out ways to take personal responsibility for their own mental wellness, for their own mental illness, whatever the case may be. And so I am doing 100% what I'm like, I should, it's like 1000% a thing, but I'm doing 100% the thing I think I was put on this earth right now to do, which is to come alongside people, share my story about my mental health struggles and talk to them about all the wellness tools that are out there for us so that we can access and we can try those out, like other than medications, because medications are great, but maybe you're a person who doesn't want to take medication, but to try out all the wellness tools. I have a friend who, one of her wellness tools is her hammock. So say she's having a day where she's not feeling well. And when I say feeling well, I mean mentally she's not feeling well. And she tells me, girl, I just go put my hammock out in my yard and I go swing out there. She's like, and I don't leave that hammock until I feel better. And I love that, you know, I love it that people have found different wellness tools for themselves. Like one of my wellness tools is watching Princess and the Frog on Disney Plus, because I love Tiana. You know, she worked hard. She, you know, invested in her dreams. And I love the songs on there. And it's just, it's been a song it's, since the movie came out. It's something that I've loved. And I noticed every time I watch that movie, if I'm in a poopy mood, by the end of the movie, I'm feeling a little bit better. I'm like, I could do this. And so we have to find what works for us. There's so many wellness tools and so many coping skills that we can gain. And that's just two that I named. There's thousands of coping skills and wellness tools that we can do if we're having a bad day. I think, so that was a revelation for me. If I'm having a bad day, I can do something to make my day a little better. And it doesn't have to be super expensive or anything. It could just be, you know, something small, you know, like slipping on Princess Tiana. Maybe I can go find some cheese in my refrigerator. You know, cheese is always
and so cheese is always, as a little girl, that was like my go-to. And even now, and it's just so funny that you brought it up, because I have a son, my youngest son, and he's a twin. And he always leaves me cheese offerings, just like, he'll put it on my bed, a cheese offering, because that is his favorite, you know, snack is cheese. And so that's really cool. And I actually love how you just said, you don't, medication is not the only thing that could help with your mental health. So I'm just like, with me, I don't like taking medication in general. And so I'm always looking for holistic ways that I could get over a particular whatever I'm going through. And so I'm just so glad that you said that, because there are some people, especially in mental health, that just push drugs as the solution.
They do. They do a lot of the times. And I see that with people who have mainly with schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. And the only reason, I think, you know, listen, if you're having really rough voices or you're having really rough experiences that you don't want to have, absolutely, medication can help. And I 100% am behind that. And anyway, people are the experts on them. I believe you are the expert on you. If you don't feel medication is something that's going to work for you, then don't take medication. But if you feel like medication is something that might work for you, please do. And so as a peer support specialist, I'm here to advocate for that too. So if a peer tells me I really don't want to take this medication, then, you know, I'm that middleman between them and their psychiatrist or them and their clinician to really advocate. Like, look at this person is the expert on them. It's a peer support value. I'm not telling them to take medication if that's not something they want to do. But I think people with schizophrenia tend to have that happen the most, and with that diagnosis. And I think if people with schizophrenia were allowed to really kind of explore those voices, ask those voices questions, really interact with their voices in a way that's solution focused for them, I think they could actually get somewhere. They could actually learn something about themselves. Me and a colleague, we do a group weekly called Extraordinary Experiences, where people show up who have either they see things, they hear things, or they have really deep spiritual experiences. Wow. And they are able to come and explore it. And we're able to talk about it. And we're able, you know, if it's bad, you know, what is something you think that can help? And I think essentially sometimes people are given medication and that's all quieted. But I think that's a part of them for a reason. And I think, you know, we're so quick to dope people up. And especially schizophrenia, because that's a highly stigmatized mental illness in terms of, you know, there's people, and plus in movies and theater, like you see schizophrenia, somebody with schizophrenia, you're like, oh, they're going to hurt us all. They're going to kill us all. And the mental health, unfortunately, the mental health realm, they tend to look at it like that too sometimes. And I'm like, you know, this might be something that they can explore. That's just a part, another part of them. Because I know people with schizophrenia now, and I'm so blessed to know them, who have that, but are just these amazingly dynamic people. And so I hear you on the medication, and you know, and they go through so many medications as well. Well, this medication isn't working because I'm tired. It makes me tired. This medication, you know, I don't feel like I can function on it, you know, and there's so many different reasons why, you know, so cycling through medications, I think you got to really have some really strong resolve sometimes to find the one that really works for you and your family sometimes, because if say you're a parent, and you're trying to take care of your kids and, but that goes of course too for any mental health diagnoses. If you're going to choose to take medication and you're being given something that just is a high dosage and has a large side effect that affects your life, then, you know, you got to be brave to hang in there, to stick in there in order to find the thing that works for you. And so, you know, I'm happy to walk through with people who are going in that direction, but I also honor the people who don't want to take medication. And I understand why.
That is so powerful and important. I'm so glad that you said that, because for me, I have people in my family that have or had mental illnesses, and it definitely, and at one point in time, I never got diagnosed for anything, but at one point in time, like when I was 21, and this was after a really traumatizing situation, I thought I had lost my mind. And so, like, you know, just to know, especially now where I am, I'm always thinking about, okay, what is going to help me mentally? Because life can be hard. And especially if you've had a bad upbringing or a bad different things that have happened in your life, or maybe one day you will, if you haven't yet, you need to know how to take care of your mental health and not always have to pop a pill. Or if you do need to pop a pill, you need to know what all of your options are. And you need to have a strong support system. So, okay. So let me ask you this. So what exactly do you believe? Because, I mean, like going through this journey, it's so much information, but what do you think is the biggest hindrance that you've seen with people really actually positively progressing in their mental health journey?
I think some denial. I see denial, and I see, you know, that lack of personal responsibility, man. When you are having the same issue over and over and your family's being affected and you're not, you know, stepping up to the plate to try to get the help that you need in whatever form you want that help to come in, you know, because there's always choices and options. But when you're not stepping up to try to get what you need and actively seeking out help for yourself, that's usually because you're in denial or because you just aren't taking personal. You're like, nope, I don't want to do it. Another thing I just thought about recently is another, I think, barrier And I can't say for men, you know, maybe this will be true for men too, for women specifically. So I was having a chat with a friend and she was telling me that she had just listened to this podcast of a teacher who works in a STEM academy. And what the teacher noticed is that when they were coding and doing these, if you're familiar with STEM Academy, it's or STEM programs, it's a program for gifted children who are pursuing careers in science and technology. And I forget what the other E and M stand for, but that's okay. There's bright children, all of them. But what she noticed when they were doing coding in class is that when the boys ran into a problem, they'd ask the teacher for help. Like, I don't think I'm doing this right. I don't know what's going on here. Can you help me? And a lot of the times when a girl ran into a problem or a hiccup in her coding, she would just dismantle the whole thing because she didn't even want the teacher to see that she didn't get it right. And so a lot of the times too, the teacher said that she heard women say, or the girls say, I can't do this. I can't do this. I got it wrong and I can't do this. But when she like reloaded the code that they had been working on, there's maybe like one or two mistakes, but they just completely dismantle it because we have this vision of ourselves, I know a lot of women do, that we need to be perfect and we need it to look right before anybody sees it. You can't see it until it looks good. And you were talking about a maid earlier, Denise, and I thought about that because I was thinking about that yesterday. I was like, if I get a maid, I know I'm going to be like, this house needs to look right before this maid comes in here. And that's really counterintuitive.
That's not the point of the maid. The maid is supposed to make it look right.
Yes. And so I know for some women, we tend to want to present as perfect because society kind of tells us that's what we need to do. And so when it comes to our own mental health help, either we want to be like, well, I don't have a mental health problem because I'm perfect because that's what I'm supposed to be. And I don't want to tell anyone that I'm not perfect because society won't accept me because, you know, and so I know for women sometimes that is a huge hindrance, but it also, so that also falls under self-stigma, but it's stigma. It's okay to have a mental health disorder. It's all right. You know, exactly. It just depends on what you do with it. You know, there's a beauty in that and being able to. So one of the things I tell my kids a lot, because I want them to have growth mindsets versus, you know, just these mindsets that don't go anywhere. And so it ain't going to look graceful as I figure these things out, but I'm going to fumble forward and we're going to get it done.
Exactly. As long as you're making progress in, right? You know, in the positive manner. I mean, that's the thing is that a lot of people, just like you said, they don't really start because they're wanting it to be the perfect timing, the perfect opportunity, when their money gets to a certain extent, when they, you know, and really, to be perfectly honest, when you're first starting something, it's never really the perfect time. I mean, but when you actually start it, then you'll realize, oh, it was the perfect time.
Yes.
But you have to actually take that first step. And I think a lot of people, they get hindered because they're not willing to take that first step. And then they also, you know, get hindered because they're too worried about what other people are thinking. But guess Ba-boom. What? Guess who's going to be in the grave with you? In the box with you? You and only you, honey. And so at the end of the day, that's number one thing that you need to worry about is what do you think? What do you want?
Yes. Know?
And so I absolutely love that. You're so amazing for all the things that you do. Because this is like, this is life right now. This conversation is life. Life.
I think I'm going to make a meme or something that says, you know, I'm fumbling forward because that's absolutely what I'm doing. And now, okay, I may fumble forward like initially the first time, but maybe the second time it'll look more graceful. Who knows?
Exactly. That was a big one. You know, okay, the first step may look a little bit cray-cray. You know, we all got the cray-cray moves, you know? But the next one is going to probably look a little bit more better. If you never take that step, you'll never get to the more graceful part.
Yeah.
And so that is so, so powerful. Okay, here's the thing. You know, just like I said, I have people in my family, and I also went through my own mental health issue. I just never was diagnosed. But I have people in my family. And one of the things that I realized as they were trying to get help or talking to the different family members that were coping with it more closely and were more significantly involved with the situation, it seems like people, mental health, the people in there slips through the cracks. Is that something that you see happening, or why do you think that people slip through the cracks, and what is the solution?
I think people slip through the cracks for a couple of reasons. I think when there's a lack of advocacy, so like when there isn't maybe a peer support specialist or a clinician or a case manager who takes special interest in a client, I think that, you know, the quiet ones sometimes do slip through the crack. I also believe Black people slip through the cracks. I believe it happens here in Shasta County in a predominantly white area. I believe we slip right on through the cracks because when you're dealing with white clinicians and white representation matters, okay, that will never stop being true in any form of the word. And so when you're dealing with people who don't even have any, can't even fathom what it, your viewpoint is in life, I think that they tend to dismiss your symptoms and what's going on with you as things that, you know, you can work through. So I think, and in some ways, that depending on the severity of the client, that's mental health. I think mental health has a tendency to overlook the needs of the people that they work with. And it's really unfortunate when I see it happen, and I hate it, and it can be frustrating. But, you know, advocacy is really one more reason why advocacy is so important in this field, because oh, there's so many reasons. Some of our case managers and our therapists, they're overloaded. There's so many people coming through the mental health system, you know, and their caseloads are just completely, you know, loaded, and they feel like, you know, they need to prioritize, and because some of them really are doing the best that they can. And so when people aren't getting that consistent engagement because clinicians, case managers, therapists are prioritizing other things that of more of a severe nature, then those people fall through the cracks. That's unfortunate. And I also feel, you know, you fall through the cracks too if you have not learned. And I think it really is a skill at this point. Either you're taught it by your parents or you're, you know, it's something. But when you have not learned to take personal responsibility, like, or self-advocacy, if you're unable to advocate for yourself, that too can be a contributor to why you fall through the cracks. So
advocate
those are
for yourself. I like that. That's amazing.
Self-advocacy is beautiful.
Yes. Wow. Okay. Those are some really amazing, because I've always wondered that. And I'm so glad coming from you that it works in the system, what those things are, because it's so sad. It's so sad. And I just hope that eventually, you know, sooner than later, that the things that are broken within this particular system gets fixed, because there are so many, especially nowadays, because at first, you know, back in the days, it was like, okay, let's sweep this underneath the rug, you know, send the person away for a few months and tell them that they join the army or something like that, something crazy or something like that.
We've come a long way.
Yes. And so there's more people that are willing to come out of the closet and say, you know what, something's going on. I need help, or my loved one needs help, or my friend needs help. And they're wondering where to go. And it would just be so nice if they had the advocacy and also that self-advocacy that we were talking about. And so Thank you for sharing all of your, tidbits and your stories. But listen, you know, we know that this is not going to be your last time.
I hope not.
Yes. Because you have to be a part of this team. And so, you know, I'm just so thankful that we're going to be seeing you more often. And so, guys, audience, the Healers Realm audience, if you want to connect with Josie, just make sure that you email me at tranquility@theshamanicgroup.com. Tranquility, shamanic is spelled S-H-A-M-A-N-I-C, group.com. I will go ahead and connect you, because we have a lot of great things that Josie is going to be doing and everything else. But I also want to tell you, for those that are experiencing, you know, hard times and everything else, you don't have to experience them alone. If you are dealing with any kind of suicidal thoughts, any kind of, you know, situations where, you know, that you really need to talk to somebody, please, please, please don't think you're alone or you have to do it alone. Reach out to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. It's 1-800-273-8255. Please, please, please don't think that you have to live this life or any life alone. All right. So Josie, man, I can't explain how grateful and thankful I am for you to be on the show and just share your knowledge and your story. Be open and vulnerable enough to share your story. It was amazing. It was incredible. And I can't wait for the audience to see and be a part of the amazing thing that is going to be coming up regarding you. So guys, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of The Healer's Realm. I'm so excited. I'm so excited. I'm so excited. And I will see you next episode.
Thanks guys for listening. Bye.
Thank you for watching another episode of the Healer's Realm podcast. Become a part of the tribe by getting connected on Instagram at The Shamanic Group. And don't forget your free gift in the podcast description. See you next time in another great episode.